Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Bought our first unit in Sydney. That was in Lakemba in Sydney. We picked that one up for a couple hundred thousand back then.
This is Property Investory, where we talk to successful property investors to find out more about their stories, mindset, and strategies. I'm Tyron Shum, and in this episode, we talk to four-time developer Alan Castorina. We hear about his adventures as a pilot and how he saved up to buy his first property for just a couple hundred thousand dollars. Once he started acquiring properties, he couldn't stop. And we also hear about his worst investment that took 18 weeks to settle. Alan Castorina comes from a small town in northern Queensland. He ventured into a few different industries like machinery and aviation before building a successful property development business with his wife.
I'm a property developer full-time. We do renovations and land subdivisions here in Brisbane. We've been doing full-time for 4 years now. We're building our business up. We've built a business up to the point now we've got about four or five staff. And we're enjoying it. My wife, Michelle, she's part of the team and she loves looking after the renovations, the project management part of it. And I do the acquisitions, financing and the sales.
Let's talk a little bit about maybe your day-to-day. You know, what are you currently doing at the moment every day? What's your typical day look like in the life of Alan's development journey?
I get up about half past five, six, and majority of my day is looking after my staff, some staff training, and it's 80% of its acquisitions. So I look after, I'm looking for new pipeline stock to bring in because that's probably the hardest part of the whole the model. And then I would, project management. So if there's some subdivisions going, which I've got one at the moment, so it's a matter of just looking after that, making sure the team, all the consultants are doing their thing, paying the bills, because as soon as you stop paying a bill, then everything stops. And then it's networking with agents, ringing people up, going to see sites. So that's my day. And then, I'll try and finish up about five, which doesn't always happen, and I'll go to the gym four or five times a week, get a bit of the other parts of my body working. So then I'll usually work 6 days a week, have one day off, but I don't call it work. To me, it's fun. I'm passionate about it. Yeah, so I like doing it. Mm.
Castorina always had a go-getter attitude. He had big dreams and the motivation to make them happen at such a young age.
I grew up in a little town called Ingham, North Queensland, just north of Townsville. It's basically a cane farm industry orientated town, mostly Italian community. So I grew up with all the good foods and wines, etc. And my childhood dream, I remember I was in grade 7 at the time, I wanted to be a pilot, an airline pilot. And that's what I did. I ended up leaving school, learning how to fly planes, and I became a flying instructor. Did all that, flew most of southeast Queensland and New South Wales. And then I basically did that for 10 years and quit. I landed a job with an airline, and I had enough of flying out of living in suitcases and motels, and I quit. And then I was always interested in machinery and I liked operating things, so I went and worked in industry after that. But always had a passion for wealth because my father was always into shares. He'd be studying, he'd open his notebook out and study the share market, and I'd always had that passion for wealth. So I was always interested in reading books and things like that. And I landed some books on my desk once. It was a Think and Grow Rich. Funny enough, everyone says Think and Grow Rich. And that sort of led into the mindset thing. So I ended up getting a job in, my wife and I basically left Ingham basically when my little fellow was born back in 2000, just after 2002, for a new job in Central Queensland. And this job gave me the opportunity to, because it was shift work, I had a lot of time on my hands, so I started reading a lot of books and getting into property. Property became a really interesting subject for me, so that's where I sort of got into it, yeah.
His childhood sounds almost too good to be true. Filled with picturesque scenery, adrenaline-pumping activities, and winding local rivers, he never had the chance to be bored.
Pretty laid-back town. We used to have fun doing just about anything. There was no computers back then in the 70s. We'd have fun just going down the creek, like fishing, jumping into the local river where all the crocs were. We found out now there's heaps of crocs in the rivers we used to jump into. but we never seen them, so we were none the wiser, but I'm sure they were there. I used to like fishing, and because that was right next to the ocean, really good fishing there. And so cane farm, so a lot of motorbike riding, driving them. We drove well before we were allowed to get licenses, so in the cane paddocks, and it got up to a lot of mischief. It was a good little laid back town, and we and funny enough, it's rare to say this, but my friends that I went to school with, I'm still good friends with them now, and the whole class is the same class that we had right back when we were children. So it was really close knit community. And, we still meet up to this day.
Although he was surrounded by farms, his parents worked in different industries.
Well, my parents were in retail, so my father and mother used to run it's like an alcohol distribution, like a Forex and Carlton used to have all the alcohol there, and they used to distribute all the alcohol to the pubs, and then they had a delicatessen. But all my mates had farms, so that's where I got to go and shoot rifles and drive tractors and all that sort of stuff.
Wow, that's exciting. Yeah. I mean, I have to admit, I've never shot a rifle before. I've held one in my hand. It's heavy, that thing, so I don't know what age you were able to lift one of those things up.
No, they were good fun. We used to have a lot of target practice with the local animals around there, kangaroos and whatever,
Growing up in a small town means everything was within either walking or riding distance. Castorina would ride his bike to school every day.
My school was probably about a 20-minute bike ride. So it was across town. Town was only like 3,000 people, so it's a very small town. And we lived on the other side of town. I used to drive a bike with my mate and go to school like that. Rain, hail or shine, there was no buses or anything. Mum and Dad worked, so they'd get up at 5 and go to work. They'd be at work long before I'd go to school. So we had to find our way there. Mm. And there was two schools in town.
If Castorina grew up in a small town surrounded by cane fields and isolated from the rest of the world, how did he become so passionate about aviation?
My grandmother and I used to go down to Sydney and in Bellevue Hill, my uncle that I was talking to you about earlier, and we used to go visit him. And I was probably only 8 or 9 at the time when we used to fly down every Christmas. And I just found this incredible machine I wanted to drive. And in those days, you were allowed at the front. You'd ask the flight attendant can I go up the front for the landing? And they'd let you. So I'd sit in the jump seat. Back then they had 727s and 737s, and I'd go up the front nearly every year that we'd go up to down to Sydney. And I said, this is what I want to do. And so I just put my head down and said, well, I need to pass my exams, get some good marks to do this. And I started that dream back in, you know, probably grade 7 when I was at school. So
with his pilot's license in one hand and the yoke in the other, Castorina was at the beginning of all his dreams coming true.
I started out in Sydney. I moved to Sydney straight after school, moved into a little old apartment on my own. So that was quite daunting at the time. Straight into flight school. I actually learned to fly before I left school, actually, because I got to know a lot of people in the town that had aircraft. And I used to just hang around the airport on the weekends, or just go there and watch them strip planes and in the hangar. And then they could see that I had passion, so they took me up. And then eventually I got to know a few people. I got my solo before I left school. And so I knew well before I left school that that's what I wanted to do. And so then Mum and Dad supported me, and they said, all right, sounds like this is it. Let's go and find a flying school for you. And that was down in Sydney at the time. But in answer to your question, what it was like as a pilot, it's you got to have a passion for it. It's really stressful at times because the weather, when you're a commercial pilot, you have to go whether you like it or not. You know, you don't go when the airport's shut down, of course, with thunderstorms, but, you know, a really crappy day, you still got to take off, take your passengers, and it's a lot of workload at times, and then also to keep up your currency and keep up all your endorsements and license, you have to do regular checks. The actual week may look like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday you're on, and then you have Thursday off, and you have to fly Friday, Saturday, then you're off Sunday. So your week may be changing all the time. So it's not a routine, and you might be flying from Sydney to Canberra one day, and then Sydney to Melbourne the next, and then stop in Brisbane the night after. So occasionally you're not home a lot, and the what job that I was doing, I wasn't home a lot. I was sort of staying in Darwin for a week, coming back for a day, staying in Mount Isa for another couple of days, and then so I was all over the place. So I wasn't enjoying it after a while. So
could understand why. Yes, that's fair enough. And it sounds like you're doing mostly domestic flights. Did you do any international flights?
No, just domestic, yeah.
It's amazing how many domestic flights we have. I mean, until Jetstar and all those cheaper airlines came in, obviously it was all going back to, you know, Qantas and Ansett, wasn't it, back then?
Ansett, yeah. And Australian, TAA, back when I started, TAA and Ansett it was, yeah.
Yeah, I haven't heard of TAO actually recently too. And then there was another one, I think Rex as well, was more sort of the regional type of airlines. Seems like a lot of them have sort of closed a lot of their routes off because of...
Yeah, actually the regional airlines are the ones that first to fire up in the smaller aircraft. There's some mates of mine to this day that still have their jobs with the smaller aircraft because they're the ones that they could fill the planes up a lot quicker and their regional routes started up, yeah.
Unfortunately, sometimes childhood dreams turn out to be adult nightmares.
I liked the flying aspect of it, but that was only a very small part of it. The whole job entailed a lot of other things, you know, like not being not being home. And it's a stressful job too, but it mainly was, I just wasn't home at all.
Castorina's talent doesn't stop at knowing how to fly a plane. He also knows how to operate high-level machinery and has always been interested in it. So he took the next step in his life and pursued a new dream.
Well, from there I went in where I was living was is a sugar industry, like I said before. So I went and worked at a sugar mill. They had I got interested in operating machinery. So I landed a job there. And it was only sort of a fill-in job at the time. I said, well, I'll just try it just to make ends meet. And because I still haven't worked my direction, I'll just quit my lifetime dream. And now I was sort of in limbo, and I thought, well, I'll just do something to get the money. And then I discovered that I didn't mind this job. It was quite good. It was interesting. You know, there was some big boilers, big steam boilers there at the time, and I thought, well, this could be a career. Whether it was long-term or temporary, at that stage it didn't matter. I was just feeling my ground. And then I ended up staying at the sugar mill there for a few years. And I got up the ladder, became a senior operator, and I ended up becoming a trainer and assessor for pressure equipment. So I was teaching guys how to operate steam equipment, and I used to go and teach at TAFE and do that sort of stuff. And then that led me to move on to chasing a better job, because where I was living, that sugar mill was sort of limited in what I could do. So I said to my wife, Michelle, I said, let's go discovering the rest of the Queensland, see if I can go and find a better job in the same field. And I had a few mates that have already left at the time, and they went down to central Queensland, a little place called Billawheeler. And there was a few industries there. There was centered around mining. And so I went there for a drive with Michelle one Easter, and a friend of mine said, come and have a look at where I'm working here. And I went and had a look. It was an ammonium nitrate plant. So they make the explosives for the coal mines. And I had all the qualifications at the time, and I had an interview with the boss, because he said, come and have an interview with the boss. I wasn't ready for it. I was just going there for a holiday, for a look. And nothing was said at the time. And I left, went back, and they rang me up and said, you got a job if you want to start. And I had a couple of TAFE courses lined up with the guys at work at back at the sugar mill. And I said, look, I can't. I'm committed. And I promised that I'd have these guys, I'd do these guys' courses, and if I can finish that to the end of the year, and then I'll come out to do that job at Christmas time. So that's what we did. The guys said, yeah, for sure, we'll let you stay there, their current workplace, and come and join us. So it was December the 22nd. We shut the whole factory down at the sugar mill, and then Shell and I packed their bags on the 23rd and landed in a new job on the Christmas Eve. And so I started that new job, and yeah, it was a whirlwind that year, that for sure.
Yeah, that's great to hear another company being so understanding, because it was quite a long wait, you know, for many, many months before they could, and anything can happen. You could have changed jobs and decide I'll go somewhere else and that, but that's great that they waited for your commitment to come through.
The fact that I said that I was committed to my previous job and I didn't want to let them down, they could see the benefit there. So I opened the next chapter. So
coming up after the break, we explore the worst investment moment Castorina has made.
The contract crashed four times.
The quick start to his property journey.
We picked up about 10 in 6 years.
The decision that made him start in the first place.
Then we decided to buy some rentals. And that's what kicked it all off.
And that's next. I'm Tyron Shum, and you're listening to Property Investory. Hey, property investor, is your cash or equity currently earning you 1 to 2% per annum sitting in the bank? What if I said to you that you can do better? To find out more, simply register your interest to become a money partner at propertyinvestory.com. Right now, there are great opportunities in the property market and I'm looking for money partners who want to invest to get a higher return with low risk on their money for 6 months. Register your interest by visiting propertyinvestory.com. His new job opened up more than one door. He began reading, and that's when his property journey began.
Yeah, well, it was with that following job. I started reading, like I said before, I started reading a lot of books, property books. I'd done a lot of, which I didn't mention before, but I'd done an extensive amount of work and study on trading. I've been a trader for 15 years, trading futures and stock markets as well. And I was doing that. And in those groups, in those trading groups, those futures stock market trading groups, the guys were mentioning about property, you know, putting your money that you're making, that your income, and putting it into assets and parking into there, because the trading was a good method to bringing income in. Could be a good wealth generator, but it's good to have some money in assets, right? And at that time, I said, yeah, well, that's a good idea. So I started reading property books, and I read a heap of books, you know, mindset books, you know, Think and Grow Rich. And I started getting really passionate because even from day one, I still had, like I said, I still had that wealth that I just wanted to be wealthy, you know. One day, I knew that I wasn't going to work forever, and all these things I was interested in being a pilot, I was interested in driving steam equipment and all that other stuff, but I knew that one day I'd be retired early because of my wealth. And so I'd always put some effort on the sidelines to read books, to, you know, and we did courses. Shell and I did some courses, you know, some small things there. And then we decided to buy some rentals, and that's what kicked it all off. So we bought some rentals, bought our first rental back in just right after the GFC, end of 08, start of 09, bought our first unit in Sydney. That was in Lakemba in Sydney. We picked that one up for a couple hundred thousand back then. We said, well, this is our plan. We're going to buy property and then just buy another one and build up a portfolio, because that's all I knew at the time. Everything I read was saying this is how you do it, and all our spare money, the money that I'd save, because we were really good, we were pretty frugal at the time, because living in a little town, because Billawheeler was a similar town where I grew up, it was very, you know, there wasn't stuff to spend money on. You could just have a good time going camping, fishing, and, you know, so you have a lot of disposable income. And we used to just pour our money into deposits for houses. And to speed it up, we thought, well, let's renovate, because that's what we were reading and that's what it made sense to us. So let's renovate. So Michelle done a Sherry Barber course. Come down to Sydney again and did that, and a lot of those things resonated with us, and I did the course on the disc beside her as well to review it. And so we thought, well, we'd renovate, lift the equity up in the property, speed it up, drag the money. And back then, straight after GFC, banks were quite liberal with lending. It wasn't until later and as towards 10 and 11 when they started tightening. So we could still get money out. So we got a few properties. And what we'd do is Mum and Dad would come down, because I was still in Ingham at the time. I'd ring up Mum and say, we're buying a property next month, it's settling. We want to go down and renovate it, so see if they could come down and look after the kids for us, because they're only, you know, 5 and 3. So, they come down. So Shell and I would drive down or fly down, wherever the properties were, and we'd renovate them. And we'd live in that house that we were doing up. And that wasn't pretty, because there's dust everywhere and a blow-up mattress and whatever. And we'd do the place up in 3-4 weeks. We had a few tradesmen to look after us, you know, do the you know, the electrical and the plumbing work, and Shell and I do the rest. And that's where we cut our teeth in the renovating world.
Once they started acquiring properties, they couldn't stop, until suddenly they had to.
The maximum was about 13. We got up to 13. Doing that buy, renovate, and hold strategy, we picked up about 10 in 6 years, 6-7 years. Yeah, it was quite quick, Tom, but then it come to a sudden halt because the banks just shut shop. We just had too much debt at the point.
Although he's experienced the stress of having too much debt, his worst investment experience was actually due to a matter of circumstance.
A house that we'd done up, a beautiful renovated house, and the contract crashed 4 times. Looking back, it probably wasn't a big deal, but at the time it was, because every time a person would buy it, it crashed because of something minor in the building and pest, or the finance. They couldn't get finance, and it dragged out. So something that should have sold in a couple of weeks took about 18 weeks to sell in this current market, which is, the market's quite hot. And it's quite easy to start worrying about things that aren't there, creating things, because I had a good team. I had a great agent on board. He was doing the best he could, and it's just circumstances. But in the end, it sold. So the fourth buyer come in, absolutely loved the place, said, yep, this is for me. The key point there was that we just didn't find the right buyer. All these building and pest and finances were just excuses for the buyer to pull out, I think, and they weren't really keen on the house to start with. But when you buy a house and you lock it up for 14 days or 21 days for you to do your due diligence, you lock the seller in as well, and, you can't put it back on the market. Well, no one's interested in it, so to speak, until that's over, So anything bigger than that, I've had a few others, but nothing major that I can think of, little things like that.
Basically, once a buyer has committed to purchasing, both have agreed to exchange a contract to go in, or not exchange, but in the cooling off period, it's basically those 2 weeks that is locked in. And until they've made that final decision, there's not much you can do. So that's why I could potentially keep dragging on if they keep crashing the contract.
Yeah. And you can have a backup contract, but buyers are reluctant to do that because, it's not there for them. It's not in the taking. If they're really keen, yeah, but I found that a lot of boys rather move on and look for other houses than deal with that one.
Selling the house took longer than usual, but the renovation was pretty quick.
This one took a while because we bought it just before Christmas, and we were doing a boarding house conversion at the time. We had all our tradesmen there, so we didn't have any spare guys. And the tradesmen just went really busy leading up to the end of last year because of all the activity. And we said, well, let's just go on holidays because we had enough for the year. Let's go on holidays. So we put it on hold, and we finished it late February, mid-February. So it took us probably about 2 months, that one there. So I bought it end of November, first week in December, and then it took us till mid-February by the time we got back. Got all the tradesmen back on board again. And we had it on the market towards the end of February.
And what was done to the property?
Everything, the whole thing. It was in a big mess. The previous owners let it go. So we just did 2 new bathrooms, kitchen, floors, paint throughout, new fencing, landscaping outside. The back had a big pool that was green, turtles and everything swimming in it, and piles of rubbish at the back. I had to bring a mini excavator in to demolish the pool, But because there was so much rubbish there, we decided to get a big excavator, 20-ton excavator in there to do the job, which took us, it only took us a day to do. So he demolished the pool and cleaned up all the stuff and grabbed the rubbish and put it in the truck. That's that much of it. There's about four trucks of rubbish got taken out. Yeah, that was a big job. And there was this patio at the back. Home makeshift built. It was built by the previous owner and the cement. And because this excavator had to come in, we had to demolish that as well. So that added to the costs of the renovation because of, I had to replace all that. So that was something we didn't see coming because we've already bought this place. So, yeah, so that added probably about $15,000 to the renovation. But fortunately, because the market is good, we picked it up on the other side, you know.
He found the house through an agent and took it off the hands of a struggling couple.
Through an agent. And, yeah, so basically the owners had to get out. The bank was starting to become an issue for them and they said, well, we better sell before the bank takes over and sell. And we were there and the place was such a mess. It was basically inhabitable. It was pretty bad. And we went in with a cash offer and said, we'll buy it now. Because the structure of the house was really good. We went up in the ceiling. I did all the inspections and up in the ceiling was great. There's no termites at all, surprisingly enough, at this one. I couldn't believe it. Because there's so much rubbish piled up on the outside of the house. That had an entry point. Yeah, so good. Everything there was good. So, yeah, we could see the potential there.
In a future episode of Property Investory, we'll continue the conversation with Alan Castorina and discuss his current development schedule.
We've been doing, you know, averaging between 6 or 8 projects a year.
The development that fell through.
And they said at least $400,000 to do this place, get it back to what it should be.
The books that helped him get here.
Stephen Covey's book, you know, the Seven Habits of highly successful people.
And that's next time in a future episode of Property Investory. And if you love the show and are ready to get serious about investing your money to get a low risk, high return, then SMS me your name and email address on 04998810 40 to become a money partner. Right now, there are great opportunities in the property market, and I'm looking for money partners who want to invest their money for a short 6 months. To register interest, text me your name and email address on 04998810 40.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.